Hi, welcome to Project Geospatial. I'm Adam Simmons, and here with me is Alexander Walitzek. Alexander, or Alex, I should call you, easier to say. Can you explain to me who you are exactly, and we'll get into why you're on the show.
Hey, thanks. My name is Alex, as you said. I'm living in New Zealand. I'm originally from Germany. I'm basically a data analyst. I work a lot with, data analysis and visualization. And I recently created an elevation map of New Zealand in LIGO. And once I posted that on Twitter, I got the invite to talk with you here about my creation.
That's humbling. No, I saw what you made and I thought it was impressive, and I just couldn't help but what was involved into making what you did, you know, taking a visualization of New Zealand and transforming it into a physical Lego map. And not just a map, but simulating some of the topography involved too, right?
Yeah, so a whole lot in the end turned out. So I kept the little spreadsheet of the hours I put into it, and it's pretty much exactly around 100 hours that went into it altogether. Actually, the actual building part in LIGO was the smallest bit, I think, in total. That was sort of 12, 13, 14 hours, something around that. But the whole process to actually getting somewhere where, as you said, you have that elevation model that you then can build in LIGO, that took quite a while, and one contributing factor to that might be that I'm not a GIS analyst. Like, I've never used a GIS tool before that project. I can read maps. Obviously I work with data and data visualization. That gives me a certain familiarity with maps. But actually creating that and then working with tools to actually altering and transforming the data to a degree that's useful for me, that really took the longest time and the most learning for me actually in the end of this project, really.
Awesome. So you gave me some visual examples to show alongside, for those who are watching the show, I want to show those physical examples while we talk about this and help the audio listeners understand what's going on with this. So from the images that you gave me, what should I bring up first?
I think we can start, well, in the first folder there's a picture called First Try. I think that's quite a good starting point.
Oh, okay, just a second. I have to set that up real quick. I don't know why it went away.
So while you're working on that, my process there was, or actually where that whole thing started was I created a visualization actually. Actually, let me send the link to
There we go. I have it set up.
I just sent you a Twitter link if you could open that one.
Yep.
So that was a visualization that I created, if you can open the image there, in December last year. And it was really something. I had a bit of spare time at work. It was work data, properties in New Zealand. And I was curious about how to visualize it in map form. Really what I did there, I binned the latitude and longitudes of all properties in New Zealand to, I can't remember what sort of decimal that was, and then colored the dot by the number of properties with the category that has the highest number of properties. So everything that's green, the majority of properties in there is agriculture. And I really liked the visual of it, and I liked how it looked like. And I wanted to explore it a bit further, but if you have a look at the bottom on the South Island, there are a bunch of sort of bright blue empty spots. The reason for that was there are no properties there, therefore there wasn't a dot that I could map. And that was sort of a limitation of Tableau, the tool I usually work with for data analysis, which is, it's great for charts and even maps. You can do all sorts of maps with it. But when it comes to the actual sort of geospatial analysis of things and I don't know, all the functions that you have with QGIS that are used in this this example, it's sort of lacking. So my original intention was to build on that map and sort of get a dot for each point in New Zealand and then do something with it. I wasn't quite sure what. And then there were two contributing factors as well. Once there was after the 30-day map challenge in November that I heard of.
So, I remember that. A bunch of people involved with that. And the Project Geospatial, we covered and retweeted tons of awesome projects people did during that whole month. It was a great initiative.
Yeah, it was amazing. And as part of that, some people actually created sort of this kind of map in a Lego aesthetic. So I had that in mind, and then for Christmas I actually got a Lego set, so that probably helped as well. And then in January I played around with that. I downloaded QGIS to start working on that, and then I was like, oh, I could try that. Like, I could try to, I don't know, do it in Lego, and maybe I build it in Lego as well. And so I did a quick Google search on Lego maps. Because I also thought I've seen something in the past, but I couldn't really remember. And I found a map by Dirk in Germany, who built a Lego world map, similar dimensions to mine in the end, 4 or 5 years ago or something. So I knew it was possible. I knew it sort of worked. So I was like, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. And now if you can open the first try image. So basically there were couple of challenges. Actually, the good thing was data was not really a challenge. In New Zealand, we have a government organization, LINZ, Land Information New Zealand, and they have a ton of data, like pretty much any sort of geospatial stuff that you would think of, shapefiles of different administrative units, digital elevation models. I also got the seafloor model of them. So anything you could wish. So data wasn't really a problem. But as I said, I'm not a geospatial analyst, so basically the whole interface of QGIS was foreign to me, and I have to say it's not really intuitive.
From a non-GIS perspective, for you to just dive right in and do what you did, you know, that brings a whole new complication, but also admiration for what you pulled off in the end, you know, being brand new. Because you're right, for someone who's not familiar with GIS space, something like a QGIS software could be quite intimidating. So just messing around with it. Data is not a problem, but I imagine the hard part was converting what the data you gathered into a pixelized or organized squared grid like this, converting the terrain into something that makes sense in a Lego format, right?
Yeah. So initially, I naively thought, okay, there's probably a function that sort of rasters it, and then off you go, you color it, and you're done. I still don't. There might be one. I don't know. Maybe I did it like, but it took me way too long, and I could have done it with two clicks. Who knows? The challenge was also that I didn't know what I was looking for. So I didn't know what sort of functions, how the functions were called. That made it super hard to actually Google how-tos in the internet to figure out how to do these things. And then if you find one, then they obviously assume you used QGIS before and sort of are on a basis familiar with sort of terminology and menus and that sort of thing. So it took me ages. I know I started, I think I got the idea on a Friday afternoon in the office, and then I downloaded QGIS when I came home in the evening. And I think over that weekend, I probably spent 50 to 20 hours in QGIS just playing around with things. Trying to figure out how to make that work. And in the end, I think I did figure something out. So my process really was, so I created a raster with a certain dimensions. I created sort of 10, 20 random points in there, and then I sampled the height, the elevation of the underlying elevation model. And then I took, I think I started with a median height of that group of pixels, which gave me sort of a random sample of each square, which was sort of accurately enough. That already took ages what I just described.
just to get familiar with how to do that. I imagine that's daunting.
The big advantage was really that, I mean, I'm a data analyst, so I don't know, stuff like spatial joins, or joins in general, I know what they do, I know how they work. So if I see something that is called something like that, I sort of have an idea of how that works. I think that was a huge advantage. So after all of that, and learning, for example, that layers in QGIS are not permanent until you make them permanent, which was a bit of a setback at some point, I arrived with pretty much that model, where I was quite happy because it achieved everything I wanted to achieve. I had my squares, I had it colored by elevation, and from there sort of I could iterate through it. And then there was really a lot of things happen sort of at the same time. And usually when I start these projects, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm halfway done. I can already start with the next step. So I think, let me have a look. So I iterated and played a bit around with things. One thing, for example, was actually how I sampled the elevation. I think initially I can't remember how many points I had in the beginning. I think it probably was 10. And I used the median, and that didn't really work out very well, because if you take the median height, obviously the extreme outliers, they're gone. You just get rid of them. And especially with the high mountains that I really wanted to show, they just disappeared and everything became a lot flatter than it, well, I don't want to say than it actually is, but than I wanted it to look like. So I played around with those things, settled on using the maximum elevation of those points, which, I mean, everybody working with maps and data and visualization knows there's not like one true representation of the data. It's also you have to make assumptions and you have to weigh different factors against each other. And I sort of figured that was probably the best way to give a somewhat accurate representation of the geography and have sort of the extremes, the peaks in there, so that you can actually look at it and you can point to different areas of the map and you can actually name those mountains. And if you live in New Zealand, there are probably at least three or four that you can easily name. And yeah, as I said, I sort of jumped back and forth. That whole process took some time. And at the same time, I started working in LEGO Studio, which is a piece of software that lets you build interactive LEGO models. It lets you build LEGO models digitally. So you don't actually need to have the LEGOs at home, which makes it a lot easier. The next image in that folder is actually a screenshot of that software. It's just called Studio Screenshot.
Okay, stand by. You said Studio Screenshot? Yep.
Yes, that one. So if you ignore the sort of, what is it, salmon pink color in the background, which was just for me to sort of work with things, you have your palette of bricks on the left, which you can choose pretty much any brick in existence. And then you really just drag and drop it to the middle to build it, and that's what I did. And very quickly, again, first I'm like, there's a huge LEGO community there of people that build models, usually much more sophisticated than this. And for me, last time I played with LEGO is probably 17 years ago or something. You know, if you ignore the set that I got for Christmas last year. So that was, again, I didn't know how to approach that. And actually, if you open the render test image, either of them, the big great thing about Studio is that it actually renders your creation somewhat realistically. So before I even started building, I got sort of a pretty good idea of how it would look like in the end, which I really liked.
So just to clarify here, did you just recreate everything you did? I think I missed that part. Did you recreate everything you did in QGIS and then import it into the studio, or did you just start all over and scratch?
No, I had to start all over from scratch, and that's sort of there was just one other challenge that I'm coming to now, where I was like, well, how do you create it? How do you layer it? If you have a look at the small sort of model in the front, you can see that for the blue layers, I used Lego plates, and for the green, yellow, and gray layers, I used actual bricks to actually get this one level up effect. And you can easily see how I could have used for the dark green one a brick as well. It's three layers high. So there was really a trying to figure out how to do this, the whole thing, because what I could have done in the end is just do like a cake, right? Layer by layer. I just do put all the dark blue bricks, then I put all the brighter blue bricks, brighter blue, green, green, yellow, and so on, so that you have a whole layer of those.
Yeah.
The problem with that is it would have taken a lot more bricks, which would have turned out much more expensive, I think. And in the end, and I didn't check it, but my assumption was it would also be a lot heavier. If you use 3 1x2 plates, it's probably heavier than 1 1x2 brick sort of thing. Those are all thoughts that sort of occurred to me over the course of like a week or something, how to actually build that. How do I stack them to actually get this staircase effect? And again, there I had help from Dirk in Germany, who did the Lego map. At some point, I ended up writing an email to him, sort of asking for help, asking for a couple of details how he approached things, and he came back quite quickly with sort of tips and tricks and how we did it.
So, what's the name of the studio again?
The software is just called Studio. I think it's it just occurred to me. It's stud.io.
Okay.
So like the Lego studs.
Okay.
That never occurred to me.
Stud.io, and we'll include that. We'll include that link within our show notes as well.
Yes.
So just to go back a second and to the main gallery here, do you have any images of you next to the final creation?
If you go, well, not of me, I think, but if you go in the other folder that is in there, progress, yes. If you scroll way to the bottom, there are a bunch of photos of it.
So I feel like I'm jumping way ahead here, but just to show what the final product is, so how big is this in terms of size?
So I'm aware that you're in the US, but
you don't have to convert it to Imperial. there's a bunch of us who work in both systems.
128 times 90 centimeters, and it's 3.5 centimeters high or so. And it weighs a total of, I think, 7.2 kg or 7.8 kg. I can't remember. It's actually propped up behind me.
Oh, nice. That's incredible. Okay, that's a great size relation, because as much as I can say 128 centimeters, so inches.
So you can see it's sort of hip high.
No, that's incredible. That is awesome. And so, did you glue it all together? Does it everything stay in place?
No. I built it brick by brick, and I actually never really considered gluing it. The main reason for that is it's a Lego, and I don't feel like it's supposed to be glued. Like it feels like right now.
I mean,
now
what you got is a museum piece. So I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, but it's I don't know. I feel gluing it would be cheating. Also, it gives me the theoretical ability to take it apart and build it again.
I guess. I can imagine doing that.
I don't think I'd do it.
I mean, I guess you can always like create your own. All right, let's tear it apart and urbanize it with a civilization expansion and make that.
I mean, there are a bunch of considerations for that. The main one really is that it's Lego. It's actually it holds perfectly. Like I can lift it like this without breaking it. What I might do is I might glue. I have like big base plates on the back that support them. So I might glue sort of a wooden block or a metal thing or something, a rail there to actually hang it on the wall. But that would be the only bit that I would glue. Everything else is, as I said, it's Lego. It's supposed to hold without glue. It does hold without glue. And also, who knows, at some point I might get sick of it, and then I am able to take it apart and just use it as what it is.
So, for those who do not know, and I just had to look it up myself, can you explain the word on the map?
So that's Aotearoa. That's the indigenous name for New Zealand, and it means land of the long white cloud.
Awesome. No, that's a nice touch to the map overall.
Yeah, actually, that was something I think I quite like. It's, again, if you live here, it's a very common thing. Like, people refer to the country as Aotearoa. Everybody knows what it is, what it means. And it sort of felt appropriate for it. But yeah, I even got my mom in Germany wondering what that means. And so, yeah.
So what kind of reception have you gotten from, the people around you, locals? And have you showed this off to people, in the area?
Well, the thing is, New Zealand is in lockdown at the moment, as in...
Bad timing.
Yeah. Well, it was good in so far that I had a bit of time in my hands. No, but it's quite serious. Like, nobody here is basically you only go out for shopping and to do a stroller.
No, that makes sense, and you got to stay safe. But
yes.
So just to give you a timeline of when you actually made this creation, this wasn't a long time ago. You did this during the lockdown?
Yes. So I started in January. I ordered the bricks end of February, I think. And then I ordered the bricks part in New Zealand, part in Germany, got them shipped to my mom. So I had all the bricks from New Zealand, which was sort of a third of them, I think. And everything else, I had to wait for the parcel from Europe. And they actually arrived in the lockdown period. And that's now 4 weeks ago. So that was, end of March. I think I got the last Legos on the 1st of April, 2nd of April, something like that. So that's 3 weeks ago. And then building the whole thing probably took me elapsed time 1.5 weeks. I think I finished it the Easter weekend.
Once again, I mean, you did the legwork with just getting the map together, and then you mentioned before that was the hardest part, was just putting together the design more than the actual build, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you see taking this to any of the big, assuming lockdown eases up, right? The big Lego conventions and things like that?
Funny that you ask. So you ask about reception, and so I did a couple of things. Before I actually started building at some point, I joined some Lego, like local Lego Facebook groups.
Because I think Beyond the Brick is a popular one on Facebook.
Yeah. And then there are some local Auckland, like they have Lux Lego user groups. And like this, it's incredible. It's one of those things. I don't know. You probably ended up on YouTube at some point looking at one topic, and then you just get sucked into the rabbit hole and keep watching videos of that one topic. That's the same thing. Like, I started joining the Facebook groups. Now I have like YouTube suggesting like Lego videos and that sort of thing. So I posted a bit of my progress there, and people liked it, and it was fine.
Oh, no, keep going. I have a suggestion I was going to make, but go for it.
So then once I had it finished, I didn't actually post anything of the finished product. All of that was like progress gifs and that sort of thing. So I wrote the blog post, and then I pretty much published it anywhere, Facebook, Twitter, and the Lego groups, and that got quite a bit of attention, and people actually the people here and organizers was like, oh yeah, you need to present that at the next convention in Auckland. I was like, sure, how does that work? Like, I wasn't even aware that there were conventions in Auckland. Like, I'm aware of like the huge ones in Europe and the US and that sort of thing, but New Zealand is is much smaller than that. But yeah, apparently there are local conventions, so I'll definitely try to present it there. And actually, the local national newspaper approached me and sort of gave me a ring and ran a story on that as well, which I was quite surprised about.
Hey, no, it's an incredible creation. And for those who are wondering, it's like, hey, Adam, what does this have to do with geospatial? One, it's not just the map. It's converting data into something physical, a physical model, and physical model of the world. You know, I've seen people do this with, you know, just other simulation type things like Minecraft. But doing it with Lego is really unique because there's some other intricacies to it. We'll call it Lego is not necessarily a traditional model building tool when it comes to the geospatial industry, but I think it has a lot of relevancy, especially unique when it comes to making a topographical map, and it has a unique style to it too. You have a lot of different options, and just to kind of showcase that, even for your awareness, Alex, let me kind of show you something that while we were talking, I found. So a couple weeks ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing a John Nelson, and John Nelson, you know, interesting individual. He worked on quite a bit of projects. But I actually didn't know he did this as well. I found this article by an Esri ArcGIS blog. So Esri, you may not know, or you may know, that Esri's huge into geospatial products, and has a really huge presence within the geospatial market for what they have. You know, think of that basically the paid version of a imagery and geospatial tool called ArcGIS Pro they have. You were dealing with QGIS. Their version is ArcGIS. So anyway, what he ended up doing is looks like he made a physical map of the world's oceans, and you can kind of see what's not made is the land masses, and that kind of shapes out nicely. But incredible here, and I encourage everybody to give this a read too. But the fact that they have this Brickify option within Esri, and I'm going to click on it, for example, and figure out what this means. So it looks like you can figure out any spot on the map and press this Brickify button, and then it changes into brick palettes. So I'm not entirely sure. I think this is more of a flat map design, so it won't necessarily help you with your terrain genius that you pulled off. But just the fact that it can shortcut people easily for brickifying the world to this extent. So if I zoom out even more, press the Brickify button again. Obviously, it's not in as much detail, so I'm not entirely sure how you get it in a higher resolution that he did. So I wonder what happens it changes the different palettes. So once again, a pretty incredible. I think they go into the different color palettes here that you can get based off the colors you're seeing within the tiles. But what you use just as useful, and I think more powerful, especially when you want to do more layered builds from a terrain perspective. So I just wanted to, you know, you explained your process to me, and I'm like, huh, that let me go check out what Esri has, because I do remember something a few months ago about someone posting a look anywhere on the map and then Brickify it. You know, what does that convert to? But it's one dimensional. You got several layers to it with the terrain, which is much more impressive.
Yeah, so there are a few different options. Like there's an R package who does something similar, and in the end, I mean, that's what I did, right? Like I created a two-dimensional raster in QGIS, and then the rest was sort of me myself sort of staking the bricks up. It's a great way to start, and I was like, oh yeah, that's sweet. I'll just build it, and then I'll build it in Lego or build it digitally and then order the bricks. But yeah, there's so much in terms of colors that you just mentioned, the color palette, where for some colors you get more bricks and more diverse bricks than for other colors, or they might be cheaper than other colors and that sort of thing, which was again sort of a big part of the consideration. I mean, I had to choose colors for the elevation. So in the end, I basically took the same colors that Dirk used for his world map. But also, well, I looked at the colors and I checked them, and I was like, yes, they are the most common, or they are the more common colors. So it's easier to get bricks for them. And you might have seen one of the examples, the render examples from previously. They had like gray instead of brown. I tried it as well to see how that looks, because it looks like it might be a bit more appropriate for rock and sort of mountains. But in the end, it didn't really look that nice. And I think the bricks were not as common.
Oh, no. Once again, you did an awesome custom build, and there's nothing to compare with what you did. And that's, from somebody who just, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to create this map of New Zealand from out of nowhere. Like you said, you haven't touched Legos in years, at least to this extent. And you didn't mess with any QGIS software before. So you did a lot of trial by fire and still managed to pull off something that literally is on the level of Lego master professional. So it's an impressive build. That's amazing.
Thank you. And I think like one thing that I realized was like, it was a great way for me to learn QGIS, because I was thinking about like playing around with the tool for, I don't know, maybe half a year, a year or so already. But now it actually gave me a purpose. Like I had this problem to solve, and I had to solve it with the tool at hand. While usually if you pick up a piece of software and you don't really have an idea what you want to do with it, I mean, where do you start, right? Like what's a useful thing to learn, what's not so useful? For this particular case, it was pretty much across the tool palette in QGIS. I'm still far away from being proficient in it, but I have a very good idea now on how I can use it and sort of how things work within the tool. So that was hugely helpful for myself as well.
So before we wrap up, I want to ask you a couple more questions. The first one being, if you were to work on another map or another project like this, have you considered that, and what would that look like?
Sort of. I mean, I'm thinking what's the next project, and I would like to do something in Lego. I had a quick look, and they are people that build, for example, cartograms of the population in North and South America, I think, with Lego, which is already quite impressive and look quite nice. I'm looking more into that to see sort of what other visual representation can be done in Lego. And obviously, I mean, you can easily build a bar chart with Lego bricks, but that's not sort of the, it's too easy, if that makes sense. Like something that is a bit more eye-catchy and a bit more interesting. So I'm looking a bit into that. There were heaps of people suggesting, you could tweak things to make them even better and that sort of thing, like use sloped bricks and angled bricks and that sort of thing. I could spend, I don't know, probably two or three times the amount of time to make something similar, like, I don't know if you want to call it better. At the moment, I really don't have an idea what exactly will be next.
Awesome. Well, once again, it's an amazing project. The level of effort and motivation you put forth towards even just getting it done out of nowhere is incredible. So, I appreciate you coming on the show to showcase this work for us, and even the background process and what you did from best practices and learning behind the scenes. Is there any last minute plugs that you'd like to give for yourself, the project, or any other work that you have going on before we wrap up?
I think the one thing that I already did mention was the LINS, the public data that's available here. I think that's a huge repository that's helpful for those sort of projects, but also for more, let's say, more serious analysis for data analysis and like across the so private project, but also professional projects. I think that's sort of the big plug. Apart from that, the huge community around everything. I mean, QGIS, the amount of blog posts I found that helped me with figuring things out, as well as sort of the Lego community that's behind all of those. Those are probably the three main groups, I think, that are important there.
Any chance you'd accept any type of commission work for doing something similar?
Sure. yeah, I mean, if anybody comes up and says, hey, I would like something like that, sure. I enjoy building Lego. It's not that I had to force myself that. And if that's commissioned, sure, I would do that. So yeah, if anybody's out there who would like a map of New Zealand or any other country for that matter, hit me up. We'll figure something out.
Well, we'll put the word out and see what happens. That's amazing. Once again, I think the quality of the work is no question there that it is a professional job. And if you were to accept commission work for something like this, it could and you're willing to do it, then I think there's an interest for it. But once again, this is Adam Simmons of Project Geospatial here with Alexander Walitzek, right? Did I get it right, please?
Correct. Okay. Correct.
Showcasing his New Zealand map Lego creation. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And thank you once again, Alexander, for joining us.
Thanks for having me and letting me share my story.
Project Geospatial is a podcast hosted by Adam Simmons and Mason Rothman, dedicated to increasing awareness of geospatial technology, education resources, and industry best practices. Our show is comprised of industry professionals who discuss diverse topics such as new geospatial projects, innovations, and resources that benefit the overall community. If you're an industry professional, reach out to us. We'd love to hear your feedback or have you on the show. Listen in and check us out at projectgeospatial.com. Thank you.